Karen Russell was raised in Miami, and that certainly shows up in her work. She's a 2006 graduate of Columbia University's MFA program. Her first book of short stories, St. Lucy's Home for Girls Raised by Wolves, was published in September 2006. In November 2009, she was named a National Book Foundation 5 Under 35 honoree. In June 2010, she was named a New Yorker 20 Under 40 honoree. Her first novel, Swamplandia, is an eccentric yet revelatory family story and was published in February 2011, and we'll be talking with Karen about that. Swamplandia is told by Ava, one of the three sawtooth grandchildren who run the failing tourist attraction with the so-called Chief Big Tree, their father. Their mother, billed as Halola Big Tree, was the theme park's star attraction and the glue that held the family together. But Halola has died of cancer, and her absence is one of the novel's most vital and humanizing aspects. Swamplandia is in decline, and the family is disintegrating. Osceola, Ava's 16-year-old sister, has developed a romantic attachment to a ghost. The chief, their father, goes AWOL, and Kiwi, the girl's brother and the family realist, leaves to go to the World of Darkness, a competing theme park. Ava, a resourceful but terrified 13, is left to manage 98 gators and the vast, inscrutable landscape of her own grief. For all its magical realism and Florida Gothic, Swamplandia is a story of a family's effort to stay afloat in a world that is sinking. Welcome, Karen. Thanks so much for stopping by the Book Report.
Hi, thanks for having me, Elaine.
Okay, I have to ask first off, I have a son named Seth. So why are the gators in this story named Seth?
I know. I think it's actually distracting that they're named Seth. One of my friends said she couldn't help but picture a lot of Seth Rogans just in a pit. But this particular family wanted tradition, and I think that Seth sounded like it had some Egyptian lore to it. You know, Set is the god of the dead. So I think that for these kinds of hucksters, like, it had the right sort of Disneyfied, you know, somber aura to call the alligator Seth.
Now, you currently live in New York, but you are a Miami native. The book is so lush in its descriptions of the areas. Did the Everglades call to you in your formative years?
They did. I thought that was the most mysterious place, you know, that we could possibly go in a Volvo, or you just drive for 40 minutes down the Dixie, and then you're in this total primordial world. But also, weirdly, it's like very close to the Miami subs, you know? So I really, something about that contrast, I thought was...
The pit barbecue?
The pit barbecue, right. Robert's Fruit Stand. Uh-huh.
You've had so many awards and kudos from top names in the literary area. Stephen King said, "This book will not leave my mind." When the honors started rolling in, how was that for you?
Oh, it was really dreamy, right? I mean, to the point that I just thought it was some global conspiracy. Like, I was like, maybe I'm dying, you know? I mean, it just felt that kind of surreal. And particularly Stephen King, I mean, that meant a lot to me because he was somebody who, during my formative reading years, I was just mainlining all of his novels. So, you know, to get to share company with that, this whatever's in Stephen King's mind, I thought was great.
You won the New Yorker's prestigious 20 Under 40 Award. So who are your favorite under 40 colleagues right now?
A couple people on that list. I was so excited to be on the list with them because Wells Tower is somebody whose work I really admire. Rivka Galchin is amazing. Chris Adrian. Now I'm sure to forget people. Stephen Merrill Block is a writer I admire a lot. I feel like Taya Obrett, of course, who everybody, you know, she blew up this year, and it totally well-deserved. She's a secret sorceress.
Yeah, she'll be at the book fair, actually, tomorrow. How difficult was it to make the jump from short story to novel?
I think it was maybe the most challenging thing that I've had to do. It was a very different muscle to try to work, you know. I do think that sort of like the sprint to marathon analogy applies. So if you the energy required to sustain something for hundreds of pages, I think another good one is sort of like a one-night stand to like a long-term marriage. You know, it's a big commitment to take on.
Yeah. So. I imagine that the task of waking up every morning and filling up pages was daunting.
Yeah, and it's sort of like, you guys are still here, but it's been years. But it was also really rewarding. You know, with a short story, it takes so much energy to get the rules of the world pinned down, and then you sort of have to leave it, you know? So I loved living in that world over time, and I loved kind of watching the characters change on me over time. And I feel like I learned a lot, so...
Talk about that. I mean, I don't know if you work from an outline or what, but I've always wondered, your story is so lush. Did the characters really kind of write themselves in a way?
Oh, my God. I'm always so jealous when people talk, you know, other authors will say that, oh, I just took dictation from this voice inside me and the, you know, the character did things that surprised me. I didn't feel that kind of spirit level. There's a character in the book who's possessed by a ghost, and I would have honestly loved at certain points if, like, one of the characters would possess me and take the wheel. Definitely they changed in way, you know, the story took directions that I hadn't anticipated. The brother was just sort of a side character who ended up being really interesting to me, and he ends up having kind of his own storyline. And I thought Ava's voice I could hear really clearly because there's a short story, Ava Russell's The Alligator, that the novel kind of flew out of or sprawled out of.
Now, Ava is really, she kind of tells the tale. Talk about writing a book from a child's perspective.
I just sort of love, and a lot of the short stories I write end up being from adolescent perspectives. And I think it's just a fascinating time. I mean, I love writing about thresholds. So it sort of seemed to be a good story to set in a swamp, which is already this uncanny geography and really like a liminal space between land and water. You can't quite get your bearings. And I was like, that is what it felt like to me to be a teenager. Ava's this very kind of naive 13. And I thought for this story, too, which has some sort of fantastical elements, it seemed really important. I mean, I don't think it would have worked if, like, Ava was, like, a 40-year-old woman who thought she could see ghosts. That story would read, you know, sort of like an asylum tale. It would be a very different effect. But I think what's interesting about kids is they have access to these fantasy worlds, fairy tale worlds, and they're also kind of coming alive to these new adult truths.
Yeah, I know. I mean, her perspective on her sister and her sister's relationship with the ghost, et cetera.
Yeah, so there's sort of a double optic where I think she really is kind of toggling between worlds. Like, her brother's this hyper-rational, you know, Yale ambitious guy who's saying, our sister is sick, you know, she's really sick, she needs a doctor, she needs a psychiatrist. And then Ava herself is reading some of these same, you know, comic book, you know, haunted tales, fairy tales and myths. So it does seem sort of possible to her that her sister really might actually be talking to ghosts. And that kind of, to be on that, on the fence that way, you know, to kind of be able to access both explanations, like a rational explanation, a supernatural one. I think kids are kind of uniquely positioned to do that.
Swamplandia is so atmospheric. It almost seems made for the big screen. Have you had any conversations?
Oh, so HBO optioned the rights, which is really exciting. Scott Rudin has an agreement with them. So it would be, if it were to happen, I mean, you know, fingers crossed, but it's in development now. I would be over the moon. I really hope that it's for a series, actually, which is surprising. But they were talking about kind of like the comedy in the darkness and 6 feet under. Yeah. As sort of the attitude. It's so funny, people who grew up in Florida. I've just found this kind of traveling to promote the book that on the West Coast, people be like, oh, it's imaginative. How did you come up with that stuff? And then here in Florida, everyone's like, we stepped over a gator to come to this reading, you know, or they're just tougher to impress. They're like, yes, yes, yes. Like, we just came from Gatorland. It's just like that, you know.
Yeah. Is it terrifying to have had so much success with your debut novel?
I guess if you consider the alternative, no.
Good answer.
I mean, I feel so totally lucky. I feel really relieved, actually, because there was a long period of time where, you know, the book, I sort of did it as a two-book deal, so I didn't even know if these characters would see the light of day. So mostly I just feel so grateful that the thing has, like, an ISBN number and exists outside of me. And, you know, I can have a Thanksgiving where my relatives aren't, like, full of pity and horror as I describe, you know, the book that I'm working on.
Yeah. Well, what are you working on now?
Right now I'm working on a new collection of short stories. So that's been really fun. And then after that, I'd really like to finish the second novel set during the Dust Bowl drought. So a big overcorrection for the swamp.
What do you want readers to take away from Swamplandia?
Oh, dear. I guess, like, the Cliff's Notes really boiled down answer is, for me, it's a story about, like, one family coming of age, you know, one family in this particular landscape coming of age and coming through grief and figuring out a new way to write the story. You know, I think everybody is sort of trying. The mother of the family has died. And so for me, it's really, and I think even the physical landscape Ava has to move through, which is, you know, you know, monotonous sawgrass, this like grass with teeth, this really kind of swampy zone, into sort of a new understanding of herself and her family. So just sort of, how do you tell a new story in the wake of a catastrophe, or in the, you know, in the wake of grief? How do you become a more conscious storyteller of your own life?
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for stopping by. I loved your book. And I have to tell you, since I have the copy, there's about 8 people on the list of, I want to read that next.
Oh, Elaine, thank you so much. This was a joy. This was so fun.